I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. This is Fronteras, a program about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. Remember the Alamo? What do you remember? Is it Davy Crockett, William Travis, James Bowie, and the other brave souls who died defending the Alamo from Santa Anna's army in 1836? The Alamo myth is one of bravery and freedom. The Alamo site is revered as the cradle of Texas liberty. But some of the indigenous and Mexican population of San Antonio of the time remember the Alamo differently. Art historian Ruben Cordova is curator of the exhibit, The Other Side of the Alamo, Art Against the Myth. It's on display at San Antonio's Galleria Guadalupe. It seeks to debunk the Alamo myth by exploring and exposing the racism, colonialism, and slavery that were commonplace at the time. Texas Public Radio's Jack Morgan spoke with Cordova when the exhibit opened in February. Cordova says San Antonio's tricentennial celebration was the perfect time to roll out this collection of paintings, sculptures, and installations.
The Alamo really, for Chicanos and Mexican Americans, is a very critical symbol because it's often been used in a very anti-Mexican, anti-Chicano manner. And as the tricentennial was rolling around, I thought, wow, this would really be a great topic for the tricentennial to address Texas and Alamo history from the point of view of people of color, because the stock slogan is Cradle of Texas Liberty or Shrine of Texas Liberty, but that erases the experience of people of color because
it was precisely opposite of that to those folks.
Exactly, because it was the cradle of Texas slavery. It was the cradle of Mexican conquest. It was the cradle of social Darwinism. And once Texas became a republic, especially under Lamar, his policy was to eliminate or remove all Native Americans from Texas. That was his goal. And he actually spent a lot more money on his anti-Indian campaign than Texas spent winning its independence from Mexico.
What is the objective of The Other Side of the Alamo?
Well, my objective was to give representation to suppressed narratives. What was the experience, or what are some of the issues that people of color bring to the Alamo? And what does the Alamo bring to them? What has it brought to them historically? What is it bringing to them today? And I'm hoping that there will be a greater dialogue, that the catalog maybe could have some impact on how people see it, that these experiences have been erased because it's just still represented as an untrammeled symbol of freedom, like it was the Statue of Liberty or something. But actually, slaves were literally auctioned in the Alamo during the Civil War. You know, a lot of the people that are called the heroes of the Alamo owned slaves or were even big-time slave traders like Bowie. Travis sold a 5-year-old boy on Christmas Day one year. So there's a lot of realities associated with slavery that people don't know.
And they contradict the realities as depicted in the Hollywood movie.
Oh, exactly. And I'm very interested in the movies, especially the John Wayne movie and the last movie. It's been argued that especially the figure of Crockett and a kind of patriotic nationalism have been collapsed, so that even translator of the De La Peña diary had, you know, threats against her because she translated a diary into English. And when How Davy Died came out, that author got a lot of hate mail. And then other people who authenticated the diary, one guy came to San Antonio and a woman accosted him on the street and said, "I'd like to gut you with my Bowie knife because hanging is too good for you." There's really strong beliefs associated with Crockett in particular, that he could not have surrendered because then America surrenders and I, who identify with him, surrenders. I think one of the most important aspects of Texas mythology is this last stand fight to the death. But it was almost like a contract that you had to fight to the death, that you crossed the line, you agreed to fight to the death, to cause as many Mexican casualties as possible, and therefore make Texas possible. People raised on that, or, you know, racist comic books that were used in school where they were shooting Mexicans, say, got me a beaner, got me a taco bender. So those were used for many decades, from the 1800s until the 60s. So people weaned on that have a hard time accepting anything else. And, you know, when I was teaching at UTSA, there were people that would just be shocked to think that you could associate anything except freedom with the Alamo. It was really the essence of liberty.
And while history plays a huge role in this exhibit, it is an exhibit of art. Tell us something about the
exactly. art. Well, what I wanted to do was gather together what I thought were the most significant artworks that had treated the Alamo from the heyday of the Chicano movement, and then join that with the most significant things made in between the current time, and then to bring a lot of emerging and mid-career artists together. So it would be all the greatest hits of the Alamo by the most famous artists. So I wanted to bring together a very diverse group of works by both the kind of founders of Chicano art in San Antonio and people that are continuing the tradition in some way. And the only thing that unites them is that they are trying to utilize what we might call suppressed narratives to show the other side. And there's a lot of variety. Like, some artists are mostly critiquing Spanish colonialism and not really worrying about the Battle of the Alamo or Davy Crockett or anything else. One artist crazily has combined so many scenes it could be a book in itself, Albert Alvarez, who uses a kind of mad comic style.
Well, one that I'm pretty familiar with, it might be interesting to hear about from your viewpoint, mm-hmm. is Rolando Briceño's upside down, right side up thing with the mm-hmm. Franciscan and the Alamo itself. You have anything you want to say about that?
Oh, I think that's really an ingenious work. It was a statue made to be carried in procession, so it has a built-in kind of litter. It has San Antonio on top. And the Alamo.
St. Anthony,
yes,
right?
Yes, right. Yeah. It has St. Anthony, who stands for San Antonio on top, and the Alamo on the bottom, and they're facing different ways, and it rotates. So either San Antonio, meaning as much the city as the saint, or the Alamo is on top and the other one's upside down. And that relates to folk Catholicism, because in folk Catholicism, St. Anthony is a saint for lost causes or lost things. And if you make a vow and pray to him and don't get what you want, you might punish your statue of the saint by turning him upside down or even burying him. So it's really, I think, a clever conceit that plays on folk Catholicism.
So this is an opportune time, given the 300th celebration of the city's history, to bring this forth. And, of course, with the General Land Office's objective to rejigger the whole Alamo area.
Well, I hope that there will be more concern for the whole complex as a site, and not just, you know, the shrine of the church that was used for, you know, secret rituals by the power structure of San Antonio, but to try and in some way to restore the entire site. Because, you know, people all the time come to San Antonio and think that the whole Alamo is the church and say, I can't believe there's a fuss over this little building. And they don't realize that it was almost a 3-acre complex. But I think also to go beyond the traditional interpretation of, you know, the martyrs who died for Texas, that in many ways misrepresents why many of them came, and a broader understanding of the mission as a mission and maybe a context. Now that they're UNESCO World Heritage Sites, I hope that there can be more concern with dealing with that history.
Myths die hard. You think this one's going to die eventually?
I think so, because I think it has demographics on its side that I think there's an increased interest among people of color to know their own history. And I think once the material's available to them, and there's, you know, a lot of people who are not people of color who are interested in a real history and not just repeating the old myths. And I think one of the problems has been that all Texas propaganda has been taken at face value as if it were true. And they were great propagandists, but their myths haven't been looked at very critically.
That's Ruben Cordova speaking with Texas Public Radio's Jack Morgan back in February. Cordova is an art historian and curator of the exhibit The Other Side of the Alamo, Art Against the Myth. The exhibit is on display at San Antonio's Galleria Guadalupe through October 12th. A Columbus Day symposium and catalog signing with Cordova and participating artists is Monday, October 8th at the gallery. When we come back, Azul Barrientos celebrates Latinidad through her music.
We have all of this pool of cultures, and it's all of ours. Like, this is a representation of all of these cultures.
That conversation is coming up next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Azul Barrientos is a singer and musician who's keeping Mexican musical traditions alive. Born in Mexico City, she makes her home in San Antonio, where she's artist in residence at the Esperanza Peace and Justice Center, a grassroots arts and cultural organization located on San Antonio's predominantly Hispanic West Side. Not one to simply perform traditional Mexican songs, Barrientos has explored many genres of Latin-inspired music in her new album, Nuestro Corazón, which translates to Our Heart. Cuba, Mexico, Argentina, Barrientos' new release celebrates Latinidad. What inspired you to make this album? Because listening to it, there's so many different varieties of music. The first song, for example, Corazón, it's you sing sort of in a lower register, and it's one of those sort of tear-jerker, heartbreaking kind of songs.
Es inútil dejar de quererte. Ya no puedo vivir sin tu amor. No me digas que voy a perderte. No me quieras matar, corazón.
Normally, you don't hear a song like this starting off an album. Usually, when you listen to an album, the first one is kind of a nice little hook. It doesn't matter what kind of genre. It's supposed to draw you in, but here you draw listeners in with a completely different style.
Right. Well, Corazón, you know, that first one is just a song that I've always been so in love with. And naturally, it has a lot of influence of that Chavela Vargas style that is very, very intimate, that it kind of grabs you and pulls you instead of putting it out there. You know, it's more of a, it almost feels like that when Chavela Vargas is singing to you specifically. So I love that. I love that a singer can do that. So in a way, going back to your other question, also is a way to kind of introduce the album, you know, that it's just for one person, for you. It's not for everyone. So that intimate feeling, I wanted to kind of hold it through the album so that it feels a little more specific.
There are some more Latin American sounding songs. There are some more Mexican sounding songs. The Serpientes is one of those. It sounds very mariachi, right, without the horns, obviously, but just the strings in the background. It's in a triple meter, as a lot of those songs are.
It's a whole process, like recording an album. You never know. You put the song out there, and then you never know how really it's going to come out. When Joe Treviño and I listened to the whole thing, I realized that it made sense that the sound was more general than singular, that it represented many things instead of just one, hence the name of Our Heart. In my perspective, I see this album also as a way to kind of represent our Latinidad as a whole. Mexican, Venezuelan, Cuban, Puerto Rican, yes, we have all of this pool of cultures, and it's all of ours. Like, this is a representation of all of these cultures. Obviously, not in song, but in spirit.
Which songs are your originals? Which ones are yours?
So, The Serpientes is mine, Otra Vez is mine, and El Fantasma is a... We co-wrote it. Me and a friend of mine called Jose Alvarez wrote that song.
Caminando hacia la esquina con tu fantasma me encontré. Me pregunta qué quería. Sonrió y dijo, tú sabes qué.
And that one, I thought, was a really beautiful song also because it's a very dark waltz.
Yes.
With strings, and you've got that great string bass that's sort of holding down.
Yeah.
The bottom part. Beautiful song.
Thank
you.
So, going to La Cucaracha, it's a song that everybody knows, whether they speak Spanish or not.
Right.
And it's a song that is stereotypical when you hear somebody thinking of Mexican music,
right.
La Cucaracha,
yeah,
you know, that's the first thing that they think of.
Totally.
But you've completely turned that song around. Can you tell us what you've done with that song?
Absolutely. I have to be honest, I hated that song for so long because of that, you know. Like
probably most people do,
right?
Who hear it all their lives.
Totally. And it's exactly that stereotypical thing. And the sound, and I was just like, no, no La Cucaracha for me, thanks. Eventually, I started to realize how important that song was for the Mexican Revolution and how really was a song that was kind of passed around all these camps with the different stories, you know, like the different, if you were Carrancista, then it was more, you know, like embellishing the Carrancistas or whatever you were supporting at the time politically. La Cucaracha would tell the story of, you know, what camp you're with and who you're supporting.
Well, tell us a little bit more about that, because most people who hear of La Cucaracha, they think it's a song about a cockroach who's missing a leg, and that's about as far as it goes. So what's the background behind this song?
So it was basically a very basic corrido that people would sing, the people in camp would sing, you know, en la silla de Carranza. So in that part, it would be like, oh, okay, so this was happening, you know, and it was always embellished, you know, nothing, or at least nothing that I read, not one version of true, you know, we were fighting, or it was more like making fun of the other group. There's one that says that somebody got trapped in the mustache of someone, you know, like it was just making fun of people. Eventually, we got the version of very basic that is mainly La Cucaracha, the verse, and those other versions are so lengthy that probably when it was time for, you know, us to learn it, it was just like, let's just stay with the verse. Once I learned all of that, to me, it was like, oh my God, La Cucaracha is awesome. I have to continue doing that song. In my basic understanding of music, I was like, well, if this song is in C, I'm just going to go to A minor. And minor is always a key that is more resonant with me. Like, it's, imagine that this song was played in a cantina, yes, but more sensual, you know, like more charged of all of those feelings of wants, of needs, of unfulfillment in many ways, you know, because all of these people, at the end of the day, I've been fighting for many years. So it came out this kind of tango-ish song.
La cucaracha.
Tomar. So Nuestro Corazón is a journey, you know. It's definitely, at some point when we were recording it, we realized that it was more about a journey than a genre. Some of the songs are mine, and of course I mix from all of my bag of tools, I guess, and sometimes it comes out sounding a little more Latin American rather than Mexican. Sometimes it's totally Mexican. So I kind of just dedicated myself to do the songs that I thought would present a very honest version of me and who I am and what I like and what I do. This is really a more sincere introduction of myself.
Azul Barrientos' new release is called Nuestro Corazón. Thanks for joining us this week on Fronteras. You can find the show under the Programs tab on our website, tpr.org, and wherever you get your podcasts. Norma Martinez produced the broadcast. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our digital editor is Vince Kong. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Thank you.